Buncombe County District Attorney Todd Williams, nice to have you back. Always good to talk to you.
Yeah, nice to see you, Jeremy. Thanks for having me on.
And so, of course, you're running for re-election. Campaign season's in full swing. First of all, just tell me about why you decided to run for re-election.
Well, it feels like we just got here. 4 years ago, I guess now, took on, wanted to deliver justice to Buncombe County, a new form of justice. And, you know, I'd spent the prior 15 years as a public defender and capital defender representing folks at every level of our system, from traffic court all the way up to homicides throughout Western North Carolina and in Buncombe County. And, you know, we had seen a number of things here in our community in regard to wrongful convictions, folks who had served long periods in time on bad evidence. Innocence Commission came to town and, you know, we had some exonerations. So with my perspective as a public defender, entered into the race to deliver a new form of justice. We ran under the banner of fairness, integrity, and justice, and we carried the primary 67 to 32%, I think, in 2014. Wasn't sworn in until January 1st, 2015, and so it's been about 3 years and a quarter. And so quite often, I think people are like, wow, has it really been 4 years? Well, it's been 3 years and a quarter. Yeah. And in that past 3 years, we've seen a number of things. We've had some pretty serious homicides. We've continued to do the work that district attorneys do, which is prosecute violent crime. And I want to throw out, you know, we have a timeline that's built into our Twitter page, basically. Mm-hmm. We started at Buncombe Co. D.A., Buncombe C.O. D.A. on January 1st, 2015. So if you want to go back and look at the work of the office, it's really archived all there. We've dealt with some pretty serious cases. We dug out from underneath a backlog of, we had 10 to 20 folks housed in Buncombe County. Detention had more than 1,000 days pretrial custody. So there was a real backlog of cases that hadn't been handled. We've dug out from underneath that, and at the same time, we were getting new cases in. Together with that, in the last 3.5 years, we've created new programs for victims, such as the Family Justice Center, the Child Advocacy Center. We've also created new programs for offenders, such as diversionary programs through the newly initiated Justice Resource Center, other programs such as Veterans Treatment Court, opioid diversion. We've broadened the scope of justice by doing expunction clinics and amnesty days. In the last year, here's some stats for you. Approximately 47,000 cases were brought to court, all right? And we're talking about everything from, again, traffic all the way up to homicide. We processed 52,000. So we're getting a you know, constant input of new cases. We want to continue with those cases. We also want to ensure that we're getting good outcomes in these new programs that we're administering and we've initiated over the last 3 years. We're just getting started. So I am asking for your listeners to come out and vote and support me in this primary. There is no Republican opponent. May 8th is the election.
Yeah. So 4 years ago, you were running. You weren't yet elected. Obviously, you weren't the incumbent. I assume that there are different benefits and different challenges inherent in running as an incumbent. Does it feel different this time around?
Yes, there are different benefits and challenges. I mean, you know, I have a great wealth of things to talk about. I think we've had a number of successes that I'm extremely proud of over the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. There are also challenges in that in this job, doing justice is a very human thing. Everyone has a different perspective on what justice is. I think, you know, if you want to confine it to the last 3 years, that's one thing. I think I have an additional perspective to bring to remind of voters is that not only did I serve as a public defender for 15 years, but I was just thinking, over the past weekend, we had a protest here in Asheville in regard to ICE. One of the things that inspired me to go into law was years ago, I was a basic skills and ESL teacher, and I was teaching ESL to folks who were largely from Mexico and Central America, working in textile factories here in Central North Carolina. That's part of my record, too, you know. And I think this election gives me an opportunity to come back to voters and remind them, what human background do I have that informs my perspective on justice? And it shouldn't just be limited to the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. In this race, there are going to be discussions about individualized cases and individualized matters. But really, I think that I offer unparalleled perspective as the Buncombe County District Attorney.
Looking back at those 3 years, what are some things you think you've learned, like, that maybe surprised you about the job when you came in Was it different than you expected it to be?
I'm asked very frequently, what was it like to go from one side of the courtroom to the other? I kind of feel that it was a lot more natural and organic than even I foresaw.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the job of DA, there certainly are, you know, you're administering an office with 35 plus or minus a few positions part-time folks in it. To keep everybody producing, to keep everybody happy, to keep, you know, those are always going to be learning experiences. You got individualized personalities. It's a management thing. I never managed an office of that size. Mm-hmm. Folks like yourself are fairly new to me. As a public defender, as a private lawyer, I was not on BPR news very frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Navigating the issues of effectively communicating with the public while we also have legal and ethical strictures that are on me, that are particular to the district attorney, has also been a huge learning experience in terms of how we communicate, you know, what we're trying to do, you know, for the community to do justice and do it in a way that doesn't throw justice out the window at the same time, right? By saying too much or saying the wrong thing or compromising our prosecutions. Very challenging. So that's sort of a sampler of some of the things that I've been, learning.
You drew criticism from the newspaper for not agreeing to do a forum recently. Why was that?
Well, I don't know particularly why they criticized me, but I would say that in 2016, they said that I had shown unprecedented transparency in regard to the actual duties of the office in providing a great wealth of information in regard to the Jerry Williams officer-involved shooting in West Asheville. I believe it was January 1st, 2017, they stated that we were a model of transparency. So in terms of what we're actually doing to communicate with the public, over the last several weeks, I've done multiple forums with voters. I've been on the radio numerous times, interviews with the Citizen Times and other agencies. Now, there is a forum this week. The bar is putting on a forum. I've agreed to do that. That's open to the public. Also, in that article, in that same column, they gave my office essentially an A for the Homicide Victim Survivors Group, which is another one of our initiatives. So I can't win them all.
Yeah. So does the forum later this week, does that involve you and your opponent? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. So why not the last forum and why this forum? Was there just like scheduling conflicts?
Well, I do have a full load, but in addition to that, there are legal and ethical requirements for what can and cannot be said. And this forum that is being put on by the bar will be moderated by a lawyer who understands those things.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. So it's kind of just a more...
Because, you know, I don't think we're getting additional transparency through a forum where an individual can attack and I cannot respond. That is the thing. And it, you know, and that's that I communicated back to the Citizen Times and did not have any additional inquiry from them in regard to that until I read their response on
Friday. And that goes back to the challenges of running as an incumbent where you're the current office holder. You have certain constraints over what you can say, I assume. Whereas if you're the challenger, you're kind of freed up to unload and attack a little bit, you know, if you need to. Well, let's talk about Johnny Jermaine Rush. I know you've had to answer questions about that numerous times.
Well, we have to be very mindful about where we are in regard to the legal process.
For sure, for sure. Well, if you could just take me through the steps of that, the timeline of that, and what your actions were, and whether or not you feel like the right steps were taken, whether you would have done anything a little differently. Not just in terms of the process, but just in terms of how the public.
Well, what we need to kind of back up on is this event, and I have to be careful with my adjectives and a hypothetical is kind of easier for me to talk around. Again, we don't want to throw justice out the window while we get transparency. So these two things have to hybridize and go together. But an event occurred in August 25th, early morning, 2017, and the following day, the officer's badge and gun were taken. At that point in time, I would say what should have happened, we should have been notified that the badge and gun were taken. We weren't.
We as in the district attorney,
we had no notice of it. Okay. Now, what we need to back up and understand is the APD has repeatedly been sort of burned by the procedure that they have that kind of governs their ability to hold officers accountable, and that is the Civil Service Board. You've probably heard the name Frost, and you've heard perhaps another name is Buchanan. Folks who have years ago been asked to resign or been terminated and they've been reinstated, or we still have ongoing process, or APD still has ongoing process in regard to their terminations. So I believe without any notice to us, APD advanced their administrative investigation in front of their criminal investigation, because I believe, and I don't want to speak for the chief, but I believe she would say it was absolutely critical for her to be able to hold her. What's the use in having a chief of police if the chief cannot hold her own officers accountable for their violations of their internal code of conduct as police officers, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I think she felt that was, you know, incumbent on her to advance that and do the administrative investigation as competently as possible. Without notice to us, then they do come back in December and they say, well, do we need a criminal investigation? And the answer was yes. Okay, and what was completely unforeseeable to us when we jointly requested the SBI to become involved was the SBI refused the investigation, and then that dropped it back in APD in their lap to investigate. Which
not
is
in yours.
Which no
right. Okay.
The DA's office is not an investigatory agency.
I see. Okay.
The DA, we have no investigation faculty in the DA's office unless and until there is a charge, and all our charges have to be based on probable cause. Probable cause either found by a judicial figure or submitted to us through a sworn law enforcement agency so that we can take action.
Cool.
Okay. The DA's office enjoys this thing called sovereign immunity so long as we're doing our legal function. If we move outside of that, you know, if I read something in the paper that says that Jeremy Loeb has done something and I charge Jeremy Loeb for some activity that's not based on probable cause or investigation, I am, Todd Williams is personally liable if we're prosecuting you not based on substantive information and probable cause.
So this may be a dumb question, but if the newspaper had video of me beating somebody and you saw Jeremy Loeb beat somebody, that doesn't count as...
We need an investigation.
I see. Okay.
We need an investigation.
And the investigation has to be, well, in this case, with the Asheville police.
And we asked for an investigation.
Yeah, okay.
We asked for an investigation. What was completely unforeseeable was the SBI rejected it.
Yeah.
And then you had an agency investigating itself, which is not ideal.
Right.
It's not ideal. It led to additional things. And now we're getting into the phase of the conversation where I need to be careful because we have a prosecution ongoing mm-hmm. and we can't jeopardize that.
I don't know if you can answer this, but I think that for listeners, for members of the public, they probably were suspicious that it was just days, maybe 5 days after the video leaked, that the charges were brought against Chris Hickman. Why that particular timing? Is that something that you can answer?
The video was published by the Citizen Times on the 28th, mm-hmm. and the APD was in this awkward position of investigating itself from the time that the SBI refused the investigation. So I think that, you know, at that point in time, basically, APD knew that it was incumbent on them to complete the investigation as rapidly as possible. And I was certainly applying pressure to receive that investigation as quickly as possible. And when we received it on March 6th, we were able then, within 2 days, to do the analysis that we needed to do to take the case to a magistrate.
I see. Okay. So in your view...
And this is the point where I need to... Pretty much, because once a prosecution is initiated, mm-hmm. It would be improper for me to comment further.
So this would have happened slower were it not for the videotape release. Do you think that
there are a number of things that were okay. The first thing that delayed justice was the institutional history at APD with mm-hmm. the Civil Service Board. Mm-hmm. We don't have these issues with the Sheriff's Department because the sheriff can terminate someone at will, you know, for any reason or no reason, right. and has done that and has shown that. And concurrently with these events, there's an ongoing investigation of criminal activity by a detention officer in the Sheriff's Department. The sheriff immediately referred, you know, what he felt was a violation of North Carolina criminal law to the State Bureau of Investigation. Mm-hmm. And that's an ongoing investigation. I actually was not briefed about that, but the sheriff told me that he made the referral. That's the way things should work. The first delay was advancing the administrative investigation ahead of the criminal investigation. The second delay was the SBI's refusal to take the case once we did make the referral. Mm-hmm. So if we had right out of the gate referred it to the SBI and they had begun the investigation, mm-hmm. We probably would have been in position to review the case and charge by December or January. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but there were two delays. And then your question was particularly as to did the release affect? Well, I think at that point, this is me on the outside looking in and speculating really on what was going on within APD. So I beg forgiveness of any officers over there if this is inaccurate. But I presume that once that got out in public, everyone's nose was to the grindstone and they were doing their best, making their best efforts to be timely about submitting the investigation to my office.
Did it change your actions too? Did you apply more pressure after the video release?
Number one, we had written a letter in January. Number two, I did resubmit and it's on my Twitter page. You can go to the Buncombe Co. DA that I already referenced, twitter.com feed, and you can see my letter to Bob Schirmeier, the director of SBI here in the state of North Carolina. Where again, I said, okay, now we have a second issue, and please, I'm going to try to abrogate some of my statements here publicly about what I said, but it is online and you can read what requests I made. That was the second action that I took, and then the third action, yes, there were phone calls saying, please expedite this so that we can be in a position to analyze the case
and sort of respond to the public furor. So to speak,
people. It was apparent that there was a very strong emotional reaction, which is understandable.
Yeah. Now, so from your perspective, this is complicated. People don't know who to scapegoat for this, so to speak. So you get some of the brunt of that.
Sure.
So the
DA's obligation,
yes.
Okay, our obligation is to ensure procedural justice. Mm-hmm. And in the DA's office, there are a multitude of cases that we could fly off the handle on, that we could prosecute in a blind rage, okay? But that we have a 500-year-long history in North America of doing that, especially in regard to race and being very uncomfortable with the results. It is the job of the DA to be the coolest head in the room to ensure that procedure is being followed, that we're moving forward methodically and as carefully as possible, even when we have unpredicted, unforeseen hiccups in cases. We still have to hew as close as we possibly can to procedure, because that's what guides us. If we step outside of those procedural mm-hmm. steps, we're risking justice and we're risking our entire system that is put together to keep us all safe.
So would you think that some of the criticism directed towards you, and of course specifically by your opponent, about your response to this has been unfair? And that's two different things. So maybe let me separate, the public's response, where people are angry, not only with the Asheville police. Some people have called for the resignation of Tammy Hooper. Of course, the city manager was pushed out. There's been criticism of you. Do you think any of that is misplaced, or what do you think? How would you respond to it, I guess?
Well,
and I know you kind of already have, but.
Well, I would say, it's a challenging thing for me to respond to, simply because of all the procedural items that I've already outlined and my ethical obligations in regard to our prosecutorial duty. It is very challenging to communicate all that I've said in a forum and in a way that can be clearly enunciated. In terms of the complete procedural history, the both historical, mm-hmm. going outside of any recent case or recent events that have been in public, you really have to include it all, and then I'm in this position of having to explain and preserve justice and move forward in regard to, you know, a matter that that I have very particularized obligations as a lawyer. You know, so is it unfair? I'll leave that to the voter, and I'm just asking voters and folks in Buncombe County to understand and appreciate that my overarching goal is to ensure that there is procedural justice in each and every case. Mm-hmm. And I also understand that folks are going to have emotional responses, and you use the term scapegoated. I would ask folks to ask questions, to engage, to, you know, I think some of this is very easy to get a quick you know, impression and move on and make it a quick decision, but we're talking about legal principles and procedural things that like you said, are very complicated and can't really be soundbited.
I don't know the answer to this question, and so I'm just wondering your take on it, and I don't know if you can answer either, but do you think it was appropriate for the city manager to have been pushed out? Was he responsible? Like, do you think that he was the right person to kind of take the fall?
This is something I'm, you know, I'm over the district attorney's office. Mm-hmm. We're gonna knit our in regard to excessive use of force incidents, we're going to knit our agencies together so that we're going to collaborate more closely together, mm-hmm. APD. And, you know, and APD, again, really has particularized, individualized problems in regard to the Civil Service Board that other agencies in Buncombe County don't. Mm-hmm. But while we knit ourselves together so that we have better communication and collaboration on these issues, we're also going to be very respectful of our independent obligations.
Sure.
And in terms of what the city did, or, you know, who they fired. As a guy, I have my impressions and thoughts, but I don't think it'd be appropriate to share. I really think that those political decisions are made by folks that the voters elect, and you know, I respect you know, that process.
I see. It may be the same answer, so I'll just acknowledge that. But I'll ask: do you think that Tammy Hooper did her job, did an effective job?
Well, again, as district attorney, we are representing the state of North Carolina, mm-hmm. on hundreds of cases, homicide, rape, you know, child abuse. It is not my place to impugn the credibility of this agency, mm-hmm. For political expediency, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because we have victims who are dependent on the process, and you know, many of the I will attest that many of the human resources that they have at APD are outstanding. They have some fabulous investigators and officers over there that are functioning at a very high level of competency and fairness for our community. And to go to the head of the agency and make a characterization of that agency based on an action or a set of events, I think could harm our ability to do justice in cases that you know, aren't impacted by those decisions or factors.
How would you respond directly to Ben Scales' criticism of you and your response to the Rush video and incident?
Well, I believe I've already said, you know, my obligation is to ensure procedural justice. We cannot act until we have receipt of a criminal investigation. If we did not make a referral for a criminal investigation several months in advance of the leak, perhaps there might be some criticism there that you know, could be warranted. But long before the leak, we were asking for a criminal investigation. Here we are. We've now got charges filed, and just as in this case and every other case, a charge is merely the initiation of a criminal prosecution, and we've got to push that case forward through the system, and guilt is determined on a basis of beyond a reasonable doubt.
Do you think that your opponent understands that, or is it
I can't speculate on what he understands. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he understands it and is trying to confuse or if he doesn't understand it. I don't know.
One thing that he told me in kind of pushing for himself was he's saying, I'm the true progressive in this race. Elect a true progressive. And he said, and so I asked him, you know, is Todd Williams not a true progressive? Like, he's like, well, I don't really know where Todd Williams stands. How would you respond to that?
Well, we have a record of transforming justice here in Buncombe County over the last 3 years. All right. Before my tenure, a criminal defendant in Buncombe County Court had basically two options. They could plead guilty or plead not guilty. And I'm very excited to have an opportunity to talk about the Justice Resource Center and what we've done there, because we have to make our community know and aware of the fact that now there's a new path. If Jeremy Loeb is charged with a nonviolent misdemeanor, your first offender, or it's a low level felony drug type charge, the courthouse is now. Depending on eligibility, obviously DWI is not something that we can handle in this way, but the courthouse is now a place for rehabilitation and potentially opportunity for you rather than just penalties. Mm-hmm. Okay, that is a progressive thing. No other county in Buncombe County in the state of North Carolina has that level of resource for criminal offenders in the system. If you cross the Buncombe County line and you're charged in Henderson, Haywood, McDowell, or Madison County, your choices are going to be to plead guilty or plead not guilty generally. Mm-hmm. Or the state will take a dismissal because, you know, in the interest of justice. But what we're doing through diversionary programs is if you voluntarily enter into a treatment program or a job, you know, skills training program or whatever else may be appropriate for you, mm-hmm. We're not going to saddle you with a criminal conviction on the back end after you graduate from that program. We're going to take a dismissal. So we have a progressive record there and running expunction clinics. The job of a DA is not merely to obtain convictions. Mm-hmm. The job is to do justice. And, you know, if someone has moved on in life, has demonstrated, a lengthy compliance with the law, and you know we can remove that the stigma of that conviction from their name. Mm-hmm. Our obligation to the DA's office is to do that. These are just not idle words or sentences that I'm speaking. We now have a record that voters can go back and look at of real substantive change in our court system and our procedures to broaden and enhance the nature of justice here in this county.
The last time we spoke, we talked about the cuts that the General Assembly had made to the Department of Justice and Josh mm-hmm. Stein's office. And it was kind of speculation at that point on my end, like, you know, how is that going to affect local DAs? It seemed like a lot of the work was going to fall onto you guys. Did that
That's
happen?
Exactly right. And you know, the legislature actually passed an additional provision that required the AG's office to continue to work misdemeanor appeals and probation violation appeals. Those were initially proposed to be handed down to us by the AG because of, you know, a lack of human resources to deal with them. But the legislature actually said, no, that's not permissible for you to do that. And, mm-hmm. and the AG's office was stuck with them. You know, I haven't talked with, I will throw out there that the last time I spoke with A.G. Stein was in regard to the Johnny Rush matter.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've not been able to speak with him, about the broader
issues.
Justice issues yeah. statewide since then.
So the hit is to the statewide agency, and you guys didn't get a huge load of cases.
We actually have not. We had received memos, and we were going to have training on how to handle appellate cases out yeah. of our office, which has not been something we've been required to do in decades.
I see.
And that did not materialize.
Did you guys have to start preparing for that?
We were just in the very early stages when the legislature reversed the AG's direction on that.
I see. Well, I think those are my questions.
I'm worried I'm
going to
get a parking
issues.
Ticket.
What's that?
I'm worried I'm going to get a parking
ticket. Oh, let me. So let's just real quick. People know Todd Williams, the professional, the district attorney. What do you want people to know about Todd Williams, the guy?
Well, I mean, you know, I always kind of step through the sort of basic biographical details. I am a North Carolina native. You know, maybe I'll also point out, and this is the Democratic primary, I am a lifelong Democrat. I've been registered Democrat since I was registered to vote. Mm-hmm. And
where were you born?
I was born in Winston-Salem, graduated UNC Chapel Hill. I'm sure I just lost a few votes. but I am a big Tar Heel fan.
Stepping out on a limb there.
Yeah. I live in Asheville with my wife and two children. My wife is a trauma counselor. I am proud to have the endorsement of other Democrats who run countywide in this race. And I'm speaking of Sheriff Van Duncan, Clerk of Court Steve Cogburn, Register of Deeds Drew Reisinger, folks who know the quality of our work and know what we've done over the last 3.25 years, as I mentioned earlier. I am active aside from my civic duties. I'm on my church board and there's a lot to juggle as district attorney. And I do appreciate the opportunity to come on BPR and talk about.
Well, it's always great to have you, Todd. Thanks. Thank you so much. Todd Williams.
Thank you.